Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Race Rules, What Your Black Friend Won't Tell You, by Fatima Gilliam. Just because I fight for my people doesn't mean I'm an enemy of yours. Fatima Gilliam. Preface. I wrote this book in response to seeing and advising countless white people floundering in cross-racial interactions and slipping when sharing views on people of color. They struggle not knowing what's acceptable or assuming their actions, behaviors, and perspectives aren't racially offensive. White people need a race etiquette manual, a practical handbook on how to not offend, what's racist, and how to improve behaviors, choices, and interactions in a racially diverse country. You need someone sharing unvarnished truths your black friend won't say to your face, but quietly thinks after racist encounters or says once you leave the room. In saying the quiet part out loud, I'm providing race access to educate and help you. You may not always understand or agree with what I say. You may feel uncomfortable and challenged. This book may contradict your beliefs, sense of self-traditions, and what you believe to be true. You may even feel attacked or offended. But there's value in looking at race, white supremacy, and racial harm through the lens of what many people of color privately feel and believe. Even those who become defensive will benefit from seeing a different perspective. I can't illuminate a better path for you unless I shine a light on dark truths about racism and white people's choices. Approach this book with an open outlook and a growth mindset, accepting bluntness as a sincere, positive, and unique gift. On your self-discovery voyage, you'll expand understandings about yourself, your neighbors, the country, your family, and your workplace. This book is a tool to help break the cycle of racism. I seek to provoke behavioral change, disrupt white perspectives, curtail intergenerational racism, and help whites remove blinders. I want to help whites evolve past denialism, complicity, and individual racism to minimize the overwhelming daily volume of racial trauma inflicted on people of color. By educating and truth-telling, I'm fighting not for what society is, but what it could be. Role of brutal honesty. I will be transparent throughout this book in ways I can't when sitting down with clients who are often allergic to looking in the mirror and receptive to only pats on the back. Not everyone wants to take themselves on as a project. In listening to this book, you've taken a critical first step in accepting you have room to grow. Candor is my starting, middle, and end point. If you expect a road with diplomatic sugarcoating, that's unrealistic and undermines progress. I'm not glossing over racism's root causes. Disrupting white supremacy is a painful, difficult topic. But the point isn't to make you squirm or feel attacked for sport. There's a strategy behind boldly lifting the veil on black and brown perspectives on everyday offensive white conduct and ideologies. My book is designed to foster stronger connections with people of color. It's a tool to move communities away from harmful anger, contempt, and ignorance, one person at a time. But to get there, you have to do the work and know the assignment. Target audience and represented voices. This book is written predominantly to white people, the you in my chapters. It's helpful for every white person, regardless of how evolved or anti-racist you believe you are. Every white person engages in offensive behavior. I seek to expand your understanding of your role in racial trauma, no matter where you are along a wokeness spectrum. If a person of color gives you this book, don't be offended. Look at it as a sign they care enough to help you grow in a way that gives them some peace. This book provides people of color an opportunity to aid you while allowing them emotional distance from being directly involved in your education. This approach can safeguard personal and working relationships. Primarily, I focus on Black experiences to illustrate points, drawing on years of practical experience in corporate America as a Black woman. I'm not excluding fellow people of color, but I can't speak for them. You can extrapolate to other racial groups, but we're not monolithic, nor do I represent every Black voice, since we have diverse opinions. How to approach this book. Except for Chapter 7, which is foundational and explains white welfare, the rest of the chapters don't inherently depend on each other, allowing you to choose your own race knowledge adventure. You can listen from beginning to end, following topic groupings to build your knowledge. Or you can bounce around and explore subjects as issues arise or when you want to understand something specific. This book provides real-world advice on how to react when stuck in a racial, "what do I do?" quandary that can be implemented immediately. Use it as a reference book to educate yourself. Periodically, hashtags are used in this book to punctuate key points raised, draw attention to racially offensive and toxic behaviors, or underscore the consequences of highly problematic choices and white supremacist ideologies. When you see hashtags calling out behaviors and mindsets, reflect on 1. The impact of these actions and attitudes on societal trends and racial harm, and 2. Your personal role in mainstreaming collateral damage or participating in similar conduct that hurts people of color. How to make the best use of this book. This book has many dimensions, uses, and purposes. It's flexible, written for both individuals and organizations, for personalized work and collective transformation. For individuals, you can listen to this book on your own. You can spend time absorbing the material on a tour of self-discovery and personal evolution. You can also listen to it as a family, with friends, in a book club, with your congregation or classmates, or in other cohorts you belong to or form. For companies, institutions, and groups, you can use this book in trainings and to facilitate group discussions. In particular, the Bedrock Race Rule is a universally applicable 3-step guide to cross-racial interactions with colleagues, clients, and key stakeholders. Coupled with the topic-specific race rules, this book can move organizations forward and encourage better choices. Advice on managing emotions and getting defensive. As you begin listening, start by taking down defensive walls to let the information penetrate. Keep an open mind. Prepare yourself for discomfort. Manage your feelings. Resist shutting down and rejecting truths. Maintain self-awareness. Learn to navigate your triggers when activated if your goal is a more equitable society. If you feel too angry, overwhelmed, or paralyzed by emotions, find yourself continually debating what's written, or keep thinking of excuses, counterarguments, or comparisons, shifting away from specifically exploring racism, take a short break. It's okay to pause. Don't fully walk away, but decompress and regroup. Return recharged to trust the process. Thank you for pursuing your self-discovery journey with me. If you follow this book's race rules, you can help disrupt racism and become a better person and citizen. Introduction. Becoming a racism disruptor. I've had a lifetime of toxic encounters. I've been exposed to whites who've gotten too comfortable when they don't realize who I am and when they do. Sometimes they're lulled into my white-looking skin's false sense of racial license and comfort. Other times they relax, identifying with me since I went to Wellesley, Harvard, and Columbia. Some think I'm one of the good ones because I'm not some trifling, downtrodden person of color that's a stereotypical caricature of what they presume Blacks are, look like, and achieve. My lived experiences unmask a consistent, daily pattern and understanding of white transgressions. I see you, you don't see me. And in not seeing me, you don't see yourselves, but reveal yourselves to me. And I see you even more. I know more about you than you know about me, and I know more about you than you'll admit to yourselves. And by you, I mean white people. Years ago, when I was a graduate student visiting a college classmate, we went to a party at her friend's apartment. The energy was joyful. People were laughing and joking. Then one of the guys told a story about an encounter with a stranger. As it unfolded, he did what I've witnessed many whites do. He puffed up his feathers to feel more important, summoning racism to center stage. He referred to this other man as a nigger. My ears perked up and body language changed. I went from being relaxed to intensely alert. Don't use that language in my presence. Don't say that racist bullshit. You shouldn't say it no matter who's around. Suddenly, everyone was laser-focused on our tense exchange. The room's vibe took a hard right turn. The boisterous, cheerful atmosphere dissipated. The chatter abruptly died. All eyes were glued on us. He retorted, "There's no need to get serious." I leaned forward, raised my eyebrow, and said, "Don't make me get serious." It's not like I was going to tussle with this buffoon. But I said he was a white supremacist and had problems if the only way he could feel good about himself were to belittle Blacks. Several of his friends embraced the familiar comfort of protecting their own. They defended him. He didn't mean anything by it and was joking, and there was no need to make a big deal over it. I should let it go. But it was a big deal. Nigger is the ultimate insult sitting on centuries of violent oppression, weaponizing words to support a caste system. It's an intimidation tool of white supremacy to keep Blacks in their place and maintain America's social order with whites on top and Blacks at the bottom. The general sentiment spread, with hostility increasingly directed toward me. I could feel people's resentment and antipathy. Most sided with the bigot, while others were conveniently silent, complicit. I was the supposed killjoy ruining their night, the party pooper blocking the fun by refusing to ignore the N-word incident. Any pseudo-allies acknowledging the N-word is bad just wanted my pacification. No one had my back. Someone even said I shouldn't blow things up since it isn't like you're Black. Newsflash, I am Black, which shouldn't even matter. Yet again, I was with a coterie too comfortable in their whiteness who assumed they were among their own given my white-looking skin and blondish hair. My college classmate knew I'm Black. Her friends didn't. The instant the N-word was uttered, she knew things would get heated. She tried to mediate, feeling torn between her friends and guest. Her problematic excuses only confirmed my suspicions. She exposed her own racism and inflicted bigots on me. Given how naturally hate speech rolled off the tongue and no one flinched, undoubtedly it wasn't the first time her crew used racial slurs. After calling them out for defending him and focusing blame on me, I saw no need to remain. They were all white supremacists, collectively upholding white supremacy, including the silent collaborators who left me hanging on a ledge alone without support. It's hard to come back from dropping N-word bombs. It wasn't my job to drive relationship repair nor solutions. I hadn't signed up for that emotional labor. I left and haven't seen that classmate since. Let's juxtapose this racist incident with one from my adolescence. I was a high school student walking alone to water polo practice on a beautiful day. My skin was sun-kissed tanned, hair blonder than today, and frizzy curls on full display. Given how I dressed back then, There's a good chance I wore clothing expressing my Black pride, a t-shirt with Malcolm X or a map of Africa on it, maybe even a dashiki. It was Berkeley, California, after all. My parents raised me to be proud of my culture, bolstered by a public high school with the nation's first Black Studies department and only one of its kind. As I happily walked to practice, excited to dive into the pool, I reached an intersection. I entered the crosswalk just as a car with two white guys pulled up. Annoyed by my presence, the driver screamed, "Nigger, hurry up!" I was flabbergasted. I'd never been called this derogatory insult before. My light-skinned, Stanford-educated father had been called it by a teenager with Down syndrome pointing in his face. My fair-skinned mother deemed this as a sign of how whites indoctrinate racism far and wide, including to the neurodivergent. But it's typically directed at darker blacks. Not that I'm immune from personally experiencing racism's uglier sides or inheriting traumatic intergenerational discrimination. It permeated my family, like how in 1930 my grandfather didn't accept the University of Southern California athletic scholarship he won as a state track champion because USC's coach made nigger jokes as a warning. This negatively impacted his earning potential, his dreams of becoming a surgeon, and my family's wealth and opportunities. Still, I was shocked to hear the N-word, and even more surprised the slur was aimed at me. I was just a kid minding my own business, living my young person life. Experiencing racism stopped me in my tracks, sucking the air out of me. I could feel blood rushing to my face and neck. My cheeks were getting hot as I felt an intense wave of anxiety sucker punch me. I felt hurt, attacked, violated, and abused. I was angry and filled with rage. They wanted me to feel worthless, inferior, and unwelcome. Undoubtedly, they wanted me to feel consumed by terror. My heart pounding, fearing violence on the menu, I confidently looked at them. They wore smug facial expressions, smirking for logging a pathetic win on the white man's racial oppression scorecard. I don't fully remember what happened afterward. I recall they sped off, and I crossed the street physically unharmed. Knowing my younger self, I probably flipped them the bird once getting to the curb. But I remember watching their car drive away and feeling the gut-wrenching sting of a racist epithet. Blatant racism was in my face. I felt disgusted by the personification of America's byproduct. It left a lasting impression. I was called nigger in Berkeley, not Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where I have relatives, not in the Jim Crow 1950s, but 1990s. This was Hippieville, progressive Berkeley, bastion of the white liberal. Back then, I remember Berkeley had skinheads, but the men in the car weren't dressed like neo-Nazis, looking instead like ordinary white people. What I knew then and know today remains unchanged, that average whites, even liberals and wannabe wokes, aren't immune to bigotry, are routinely offensive, and fervently protect white privilege. Whites habitually do racist things, often without realizing it. This is why I'm telling it like I see it in this book, The Quiet Part, out loud. I'm disclosing what your Black friends won't tell you, but may secretly think about you, how you behave, and your choices. I know that even whites with an evolved understanding of race dynamics need rudimentary help with basic concepts to minimize the racist behaviors they engage in daily, including subconsciously. No matter how racially aware you think you are, if you're white, you still need this book. It's necessary medicine for you to look within to understand the personal role you play in bigotry and racial trauma. There's a constant stream of white supremacy in every Black life. No matter the actual color or shade, all Blacks must endure a normalized pattern of racist behaviors, including from nice white people. We're living with the incessant burden of wearing psychological armor and leveraging life-saving street smarts to survive. It's an assaulting continuum of offensive and exhausting experiences repeating over and over. I've been experiencing, befriending, going to school with, and working among you all my life. Without fail, you keep unveiling your true selves. You do it whether you're a Republican or Democrat. You do it when you're a liberal, including when trying to prove you're my anti-racist ally, professing Black Lives Matter, or volunteering to advance diversity initiatives. And you do it voting for the status quo in elections, or clinging to NIMBY, not in my backyard, mindsets in your community. I've heard you talk about years-old community organizing and humanitarian work like it's a badge of honor, absolving you from resolving what's happening today while simultaneously being microaggressive. Whites often don't feel threatened when looking at me, either walking down the street or working beside me. Well, that's until they experience my intelligence. Then some employ predictable strategies to thwart my success, feeling compelled to realign with a white-centered social order to avoid accepting their personal mediocrity or working harder to fairly compete to earn their spot. This is my life. I move in your circles and see how racist many of you are, how average whites are bigots without realizing it, and even when thinking you're a good person. Being a light-skinned woman of color provides a unique, unconventional lens into white behaviors, mindsets, and perspectives on privilege, racism, opportunity hoarding, and complicity. I have firsthand experience seeing whites float through life wearing blinders, living in an alternate reality where their perceived world isn't the real world as experienced by people of color. I have insight into how drastically whites' perceptions are grossly misaligned and detached from accurate history, and what many people of color actually think about interactions with whites. This includes when you think you're likable and we're friends, but we'd never invite you to the cookout. This is why I'm taking the gloves off to tell you what you need to hear. You need someone who looks like you but isn't like you to say the unvarnished truth, unfiltered and ripping off the Band-Aid. As a society, we can dance around white feelings for only so long. Keeping whites in the dark about harms inflicted on people of color isn't helping the country improve. You won't grow if my book is just another exercise in tiptoeing around white feelings, tears, and fragility, dysfunctionally coddling white denial and discomfort. If that strategy worked, we'd have less racism by now. While this book may be a tough pill to swallow, it's time to digest some harsh realities. Contrary to what you might feel is a personal attack on your character or a battering for the sake of it, I actually want you to evolve and be your best self. I've written this book mostly for whites, but my core motivation is to help people of color. We deserve better treatment. I want oppressive and toxic behaviors to change, and I seek a world where people of color don't have to experience as much daily trauma and racist psychological warfare. This book will help you get your knee off our necks. The Birth of Race Rules, a Handbook for Whites. Having lived through a lifelong loop of dehumanizing misconduct by clueless, insensitive, ill-informed whites and extreme self-actualizing bigots, one evening I had a light bulb moment. I was watching the evening news. Like clockwork, another racist Karen was going viral for falsely calling the police on an innocent Black person. I reflected on my lived experiences and background as a diversity expert. I ruminated on those who sit in silence as privileged spectators, choosing to co-sign on white supremacy, yet falsely believing their complicit inaction isn't racist action, when that's exactly what it is. I thought, white people need a manual, a how-to guide to be less offensive, an innovative guidebook of race rules that candidly spells out the guardrails of acceptable cross-racial behavior. Practical, actionable advice could minimize the outward expression of white prejudices while educating whites to shift their detrimental behaviors. I found myself acknowledging how whites habitually choose racism by supporting the status quo, wanting to explain that the only state of being that matters is proactively choosing to stand against racism each day, since action defies the comfortable laziness of society's current situation. As the newscast continued, I contemplated how it's whites' job to dismantle racism since they invented, uphold, and benefit from it to protect what I describe as white welfare. How to unlearn racism and become a racism disruptor. To jumpstart change, I developed my bedrock race rule as a foundational principle. It's the book's overarching race rule. Choose to disrupt racism every day. Whether you have a question, knowledge gap, general topic you want to better understand, or specific challenge where you don't know how to act, proceed, interact, respond, or think, use my bedrock race rule as your guiding North Star. You can approach your quandary by running it through the bedrock race rule's 3-step process to expand your thinking and get direction on what to do and how to evolve your mindset. Implementing this rule is the pathway to transforming into a racism disruptor, that is, a proactive, action-oriented, anti-racism advocate. Being a racism disruptor is a position above ally. Allies can be bystanders. Their role requires no real action steps, often drifting into complicity and relying on hearts and minds ideologies. Erroneously, allies are prone to believing that merely disagreeing with racist behaviors or empathizing with people of color is enough, granting themselves a pass from taking action, speaking up, or moving beyond performative steps. Racism disruptors outwardly express their support for anti-racism through deeds and choices that positively impact people and communities of color. They seek to align internal thoughts with helpful external action. Bedrock race rule. Choose to disrupt racism every day. Complacency supports racism, and the best way to unlearn and disrupt racism is through action and behavioral change starting today. Step 1. Learn to unlearn. External education. Step 2. Reflect to repair. Internal evaluation. Step 3. Act to address. Positive action. This 3-step process is a learning and action model that prompts you to learn by educating yourself and by acting. It encompasses various themes: avoiding complacency, edifying through a continuous improvement cycle, prioritizing impact over intent, breaking patterns of intergenerational racism, and developing empathy to humanize people of color. These concepts are baked into the change model. Skills develop through experience, habit, and ongoing exposure. This allows you to adapt to changing circumstances and maintain a baseline competency. Unlearning racism is a lifelong routine of perpetual learning through the ongoing ritual of doing and not choosing inaction. When you take stock of what worked and failed, this helps create a continual improvement cycle of learning, unlearning, and growing. Eventually, a perpetual learning loop becomes second nature. Over time, you develop into a more culturally aware, empathetic person, making better choices that cause less harm to people of color. Here is more detail on the 3 steps. Step 1. You learn to unlearn by challenging assumptions about what you perceive to be true, educating yourself where you have knowledge gaps, and seeking to deprogram misinformation. You proactively absorb external educational sources to create space to change your mindset. This is how you can begin to align what you perceive to be true about yourself, society, people of color, and what they think about your behavior and choices with what's actually true. Step 2. You reflect to repair by conducting an internal evaluation into how you've behaved in the past, your thinking, and whether your decisions and actions have harmed others. This is where you take an honest look at how your beliefs and behaviors are anchored in racist ideologies. It requires admitting hard self.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?